Good morning. It is now 9:40 a.m. on Tuesday, January 6, 2026. I am the Northwest Seaport Alliance co-chair, Port of Tacoma President John McCarthy. A quorum of the managing members has assembled in the executive session conference room. Present in attendance at this time are Commissioner Zhang, Wilcox, Keller, and myself. Commissioner Marzano is on his way and should arrive shortly. And also present are Commissioners Hasegawa, Calkins, and Fellerman. We will now recess to executive sessions pursuant to state law, RCW 43.30.110, to receive and evaluate complaints of charges brought against a public officer or employee, and RCW 42.30.110 to discuss with legal counsel representing the agency, litigation and potential litigation defined as the legal risk of a proposed course of action or current practice that the agency has identified when public discussion of the legal risk is likely to result in adverse legal or financial consequences to the agency. The executive session is scheduled to end at 10:30 a.m. this morning and will be immediately followed by a closed session pursuant to the Federal Maritime Commission regulations and related laws found at 46 U.S.C. Section 40306 and 46 CFR Sections 535.608 and others, as well as the Port of Seattle and Port of Tacoma Alliance Agreement. That's the FMC agreement. This closed session is scheduled to end at 11 a.m., and then we will reconvene in public session at noon. Thank you.
The managing members are extending their executive session for 30 minutes, ending at 11 o'clock a.m. They will still reconvene in public session at noon. Thank you.
Okay, good morning. This, once again, is co-chair John McCarthy. The managing members have completed our closed FMC session. It is now 11:40 a.m. We will return to executive session pursuant to RCW 42.30 to receive and evaluate complaints or charges brought against a public officer or employee. We will reconvene in public session at 12:10. Thank you. It's now 12:20 p.m. And I call the regular managing member meeting of January 6, 2026 back to order. I am Alliance co-chair John McCarthy. Co-chair Hasegawa is also present, as are Commissioners Ng, Calkins, Cho, Fellerman, Keller, Marzano, and our newest member, Wilcox. Thank you for joining us. Also, via Teams, I believe we have Commissioner Mohammed present.
Correct.
Okay, thank you. At this time, I invite you to please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The first thing on our agenda is a report from our CEO, John Wolf. Report.
Thank you, Co-Chair McCarthy, and Happy New Year to everyone. Welcome to the January meeting of the Northwest Seaport Alliance. We have just three action items for the Commission today. The first is an uncollectible account write-off with some business activity at our EB1 site in the Tacoma Harbor. This is an operation that the Seaport Alliance manages, and so we'll walk through that request that accounting action. The second item is a First Amendment to our Raymont Logistics lease at Terminal 10 in Seattle, and this has to do with a restructure of the lease associated with the Raymont Logistics subletting to our trucking community. And then the third item is a good news story, and that is a request to enter into an interlocal agreement with our port partners over in Eastern Washington, the ports of Benton County, Port of Pasco, and Port of Walla Walla. And this has to do with our ongoing desire to build upon the activities over there with our export community and connecting that to our deep water port and using short haul rail to create an inland logistics center in Eastern Washington. And again, want to highlight how important this is, not only to the Seaport Alliance, but to the other port partners that have already taken action to approve this interlocal agreement, and related to the state of Washington, as it's tied to our overall state trade strategy. So excited about that opportunity for us. And then under general business, staff will provide an update on our commercial and operational activities. With that, I will turn it back to Co-Chair McCarthy. Thank you.
Thank you. We are now at public comment. Comments are welcome regarding items appearing on the agenda and items related to the general business of the Alliance. Remarks are limited to 3 minutes. No one has signed into our public comment sign-up sheet. Is there anyone present that would like to make a public comment? I do want to acknowledge, and I brought with me, that we received, all of the managing members received a letter from Kurt Ellison, who is the Maritime Policy Manager of Climate Solutions, related to the strategic climate issue that we have on the agenda. We have all received that, and I'll acknowledge receipt of that for the record. I don't believe there are any work groups or committee reports for today. And I'm looking around and no one is raising their hands. Commissioner Feldman.
It's common practice at the Port of Seattle that just the summary of any written public comments be right. Given. Could you just briefly suggest what the nature of that letter
okay.
is?
And you received it, I think.
Yes, but for the general public.
Mr. Ellison wrote a very good note. He and others have spent a great deal of time studying the plan that the Alliance has put together, which will be on the agenda, consent agenda for adoption. And he really wanted to extend his appreciation to Steve Nichols, Graham Vandersheldon, and Megan Reckmeyer, as well as other staff that were involved in the process. He was very appreciative of the process and appreciative of the fact that issues that were raised have been addressed in the plan that's finally in final form for adoption today. He was very respectful and appreciative of the transparency that the Northwest Seaport Alliance exhibited. He's in part of an advocacy organization, and he indicated that he will, of course, will always challenge the NWSA and the member ports to set ambitious emission targets, as well as being aggressive working towards those goals. But he also acknowledged the transition process and the time it takes to transition from different methods of the work that we do and resources that we utilize. And so he looked forward to providing further comment, but my short summary is I thought it was a very productive, positive letter. Is that a pretty good
Thank
summary?
You. No, that's great.
Okay. Next time I'll prepare something.
Well, for the general public, it's good to know.
All right, thank you. Once again, I don't think we have any committee or work group reports, so we will move to the consent agenda. Items on consent are considered routine and are taken up by one action. Today's agenda consists of items 8B, 8A through 8E. And actually through 8F. And for most of these items, we have a package of material that has some of the information on the items. Item 8A is approval of the December 2nd, 2025 minutes. 8B is approving the disbursements totaling $22,116,610.66 on checks and electronic payments in the amount of $18,617,974.72 issued during the period of November 21st, 2025 to December 21st, 2025, and those have been certified by the Northwest Seaport Alliance Auditor. Item 8C of the consent agenda is increased project authorization in the amount of $10,000 for a total authorized amount of $700,000 for work associated with the Parcel 86 pipe realignment project. Item 8D is adopting Resolution 2026-01, which is the Northwest Seaport Alliance's 2026 through 2030 Clean Air Implementation Plan, and that's the plan I referenced earlier. And we had a full briefing on it last month. And once again, other than the comment that I indicated today, we've received no further comment. Item 8E is approving a partial settlement agreement with the Washington State Department of Ecology for the 2025 Industrial Stormwater General Permit Appeal in substantially the same form as presented, and further authorizing additional funding in the amount of $250,000 for litigation costs for remaining issues. Item 8F is authorizing council to retain an outside investigator for an amount not to exceed $60,000 pursuant to Northwest Seaport Alliance Resolution 2024-03. Are there any requests by commissioners to remove any of these items from consent? Seeing no hands being raised, do I have a motion and a second to adopt the consent agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Hasegawa, seconded by Commissioner Keller. Any questions or comments? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the consent agenda, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. Any abstentions? The motion carries unanimously. And I did hear you, Commissioner Muhammad. Thank you. So, Commissioner or CEO Wolf, if you'd like to introduce our next action item.
Thank you, Co-Chair McCarthy. Action item 9A is an uncollectible account write-off from GMA of Everett Motors LLC. Presenting today will be David Morrison, our Chief Financial Officer, and Andre Emile, our Senior Manager of Business Development. Welcome, and David, over to you.
Thank you, CEO Wolf. Commissioners, today I'm here to request the managing members of the Northwest Seaport Alliance to authorize the CEO or his delegate to write off GMA of Everett Motors LLC's uncollectible account in the approximate amount of $470,000. So I'll give you a little bit of background. GMA of Everett imported 79 vehicles from Asia between July and August of 2024. All 79 vehicles were denied entry into the United States due to failure to meet certain motor vehicle standards. So the GMA paid the shipping company to send them over from Asia. They came here and they were rejected by the federal government, and CBP would not let them into the country. We staff coordinated with GMA of Everett, Customs, and the ocean carrier, resulting in the 79 vehicles being put back on the ship and going back to Asia from EB1. In December of 2024. And we had prior experience with GMA. We've had done 19 successful transactions with them since 2022. So when the cars were shipped back, GMA said they would pay their fees, which were due to us for storage mainly. And we were glad to have the 79 cars leave the EB1 facility because it does take up room. Let me also note, and it's not on the slide, we make about $500,000 a year in revenue and income from handling POVs, private owned vehicles that come in by owners. Some of them are onesie-twosies, some military people bringing in cars. Others are a business where they take cars that are no longer allowed to be driven. For example, in Japan, any car over 25 years cannot be driven in Japan, so the car would be bought by someone in the United States and brought over here and sold. So we have a, it is a money-producing business, not very large, considering our revenue is $250 million, but $500,000 or so a year in revenue from autos. So we, after the cars were sent back to Asia, we invoiced GMA. We started our standard collection procedure. We found the GMA of Everett was unresponsive and they could not be reached by email or phone or regular mail. And we, through our normal systems, continued to accrue approximately $6,000 a month in financing fees. But the bulk of GMA of Everett's charges are resulting from unpaid balances coming from the application of the NWSA tariff and not from any expenditures of the public funds. So we didn't spend money to bring them here. It wasn't like we incurred incremental costs to have the cars on our facility. We sent a demand letter to GMA on July 8th of 2025 for a total of $422,034.14. And in the slides, I've detailed the breakdown of those costs, but most of it is storage fees that were implemented through our tariff. And we implemented a storage fees on our on cargo brought in to give an incentive such that the cargo wouldn't remain on our terminal very long, right, that they'd start racking up fees. What has happened as issues, for example, with passing through customs, the cars stay on the property, or POVs, excuse me, stay on the property for long periods of time, and the customers are experiencing the large fees associated with our current tariff. So what we'll be proposing here in a second is a write-off of the amount due of about $470,000, and it will reduce the NWSA revenue in income in 2025. And as stated earlier, the NWSA did not experience any direct cash cost associated with this revenue. Andre?
Good afternoon, commissioners. So the commercial solution is really focused on a fundamental premise that if the ocean carriers book the cargo, that it can enter the United States, that it's going to clear customs. So we're unique in that we operate in this way. So we receive the cargo. So what we've done is we are shifting risk from us to the ocean carriers. So they will do their due diligence and vet the cargo before it comes here. So we've made a number of changes to our tariff to further prevent any issues like this occurring in the future.
So some additional information. So we estimate we process around 20,000 roll-on, roll-off units per year at the EB1 facility and sometimes at T7. So over a four-year period, we approximately handled 80,000 units. Now, most of our tariffs are not based on units. They're based on tonnage, so we don't count onesie-twosie as things comes in. So it's a bit of an estimate. So since December 2021, approximately 46 cars, in addition to the 79 cars that GMA of Everett brought in, have been prevented from entering into the country by CBP or abandoned by their owners. So it's about 0.06% of the cargo over those 4 years has accumulated and been on our terminal certainly longer than we wanted. And most of that cargo, it came in 2024. So we have some things to do to remove these 46 cars that remain. So we haven't invoiced yet for the storage fees because the process is that we invoice when the cargo leaves. And so these 46 cars that remain, we haven't invoiced them, so it's not a write-off technically. Clearly, the amount due for storage for these cars exceeds the value of the POVs to their customers. So to motivate the POV importers, we will attempt to negotiate an amount to allow the person who imported the cars to pay us, the Alliance, something and take those cars off our property if they are released by CBP. all the POVs that have not been allowed to enter the USA, so CBP is not allowing the Customs and Border Protection, sorry for those, I'm using a three-letter acronym for our new commissioner, sorry about that, Customs and Border Protection, the alliance will incur a cost for disposal. We don't know what that is yet, but it won't be, we'll have to take it to metal recycling and be destroyed because the cars are not allowed in the country. So there is still additional work to do to remove these remaining 46 cars. There will not be a revenue write-off as the amounts have not been invoiced. So in conclusion, I'm requesting the managing members of the Northwest Seaport Alliance to authorize the CEO or his delegate to write off GMA of Everett Motors LLC's uncollectible amount in the amount of approximately $470,000.
Okay, first put a motion on the floor. Does anyone have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Cho, seconded by Commissioner Keller to authorize the CEO to write off GMA of Everett Motors LLC's uncollectible account in the amount of $470,000. Commissioner Cho.
Yeah, you know, I'd like to get a sense for how big of a company GMA is. I understand that they move cars, but, you know, relative to their entire business portfolio, what is this?
They were a small company. They've gone out of business. We cannot collect from them. That's one of the right reasons we're asking to write this off. After we sent our collection letter, we then found out that they had stopped doing business. They had done 19 previous transactions, but it's 2Zs, 5Zs. It's a small company that's importing these used cars from Asia and then reselling them.
So I guess my concern here is that we're setting a precedent or moral hazard where if a company decides not to pay us, they can just close the business and not pay us. Is there no corporate, I mean, there's no personal guarantee for smaller tenants like the ones that you're mentioning that they have to sign in an operating contract, like you would if you were a small tenant in a building?
So, Commissioner, our tariff governance, how we operate at EB1, we don't have anything in there that states that they must sign anything with us. But the assumption is that they will, if they import the vehicles through our gateway, that they operate under the tariff.
Andre, can you explain, though, I think part of what Commissioner Cho is asking is how do we prevent this from happening again?
Oh, well, okay, so that's a great question, Commissioner. So what we're doing is, in my 19 years in the Gateway, we've had two previous units that we've had to surplus or dispose of. So this is a recent phenomenon. So what we're doing is we're changing the tariff to reflect that you, the ocean carrier, do your due diligence before you bring the cargo to us. And so we're going to be getting rid of cargo within 90 days if it has not cleared or entered. And the ocean carrier will be responsible for all fees, including our own, if the cargo has either been denied entry or has not had entry filed to enter the country. So that will leave a very small amount of risk.
So GMA is not the carrier, they're the importer.
They bought the cars, brought them over, paid the shipping company to carry.
Got it. And who is the carrier?
It was Glovis Ocean.
Oh, okay.
Got it. Any additional questions? Commissioner Fellman.
Are these collectible, valuable cars?
In some cases, yes, but I guess it depends on what you determine value. But as far as dollars, some are pretty expensive, but majority I don't believe are.
So it's not like some foreign interest would buy them and pay shipping to get them off our dock?
As far as the resolution of the vehicles that are currently on the dock, I don't know. I honestly don't know which vehicles we have.
Well, I'm just wondering, if we're going to incur potential disposal costs, shouldn't we see if we could sell them?
That's what I told you we're trying to do. In the case of the 46 cars that remain, we will see what CBP will be allowed to enter into the United States. We will go seek to see if the people who, for example, there are 26 cars, additional cars that came in 2024. They've racked up $30,000 per car in storage fee. The cars are not worth $30,000 each, so no one will ever pay that. We can go back, and if those cars could be allowed in the USA, we will see if what we can get from the person who imported them to offset, to help prevent us from having to pay for scrap. But clearly the cars that are here that CBP says cannot be driven or in the United States, we're going to have to take to a recycling and have them destroyed, and that will incur some costs.
I was just thinking, like, it's not like a vintage Lamborghini that some collector will be able to, all right, so somebody would pay to have it shipped someplace else. That's not the case.
No.
Commissioner Cho.
Yeah, no, I mean, I kind of question the notion that there's no value to these cars. Why would they import cars to the tunes of thousands of dollars if they have no value?
Not that the value, for example, the tariff today would say you owe us $30,000 in storage. On a $10,000 car, no one's going to pay $30,000 worth of storage on a $10,000 car.
Right. The idea is not to break even, right? It's to recoup as much money as we possibly can.
Right. We will see what we can get from anyone who will take those cars to avoid the disposal costs.
I say we just export them to someone else.
It's finding someone on the other side to receive them. That's the challenge. So on 26 cars, we were working with CBP. CBP won't let them into the country. We wanted to send them back, but there was no one to send them to. So now we would have to find a buyer in Korea or Japan or somewhere to buy the cars, and then someone would have to pay. So we're in a situation where it's going to cost us one way or the other.
Any additional questions, Commissioner Marzano?
Yeah, just very quickly for Commissioner Cho's, I have had the luckiness or whatever you want to call it of driving some of those cars off the ship, and I can guarantee you they are held together sometimes with barbed wire or some kind of one. I think David touched on it. No one's going to ask for those cars. And the owners who grab them and stuff like this, if they're lucky enough to get them off, just do it strictly for their own little neighborhood, you know, because the cars are not, I can understand why Asia says that's enough, get rid of them.
Or CBP says get them out.
Yeah. Okay, I'm not seeing any further hands, so I'll call for a vote. The motion is to authorize the write-off as designated. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. Any abstentions? The motion passes unanimously. Commissioner Muhammad, did I hear you there?
Aye.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Commissioners. We appreciate this.
Next item on the agenda is item 9B, the First Amendment to the Raymont Logistics Seattle lease at Terminal 10.
Thank you. Erin Light, Senior Real Estate Manager, here to request approval to execute the First Amendment to the Raymont Logistics lease at Terminal 10.
Could you bring the mic a little closer?
Yes, thank you. The specific action I'm requesting requests the managing members of the Northwest Seaport Alliance authorize the CEO or his delegate to execute a First Amendment to the Raymont Logistics Seattle lease at Terminal 10 in substantially the same form as attached. To start with some background on why we created this lease, the NWSA and Raymont entered into a lease agreement in 2022 for Terminal 10 with the goal of improving the site as a whole for a transload facility. This site has historically, since about 2013, been leased to small independent trucking companies. At the NWSA's request, Raymont agreed at the initiation of the lease to sublet a portion of Terminal 10 to 7 trucking companies that had active month-to-month leases at Terminal 10. This arrangement enabled the trucking companies to maintain their lease premises and remain in close proximity to the cargo terminals. This is an aerial of Terminal 10. The colored different locations are the current Terminal 10 trucking tenants, and then the other area is utilized by Raymont Logistics. Due to marketplace challenges, 2 of the original 7 subtenants have ceased operations at Terminal 10. This left an outstanding combined balance due to Raymont in the amount of approximately $183,303. In addition, the active tenants have a combined past due rental balance owed to Raymont in the amount of $252,377. Raymont is delinquent to the NWSA in the amount of approximately $990,308. Of this total amount, $435,681 is directly attributed to the outstanding balance owed to Raymont by the subtenants. The remainder of this amount, being $554,626, is due to marketplace challenges. Staff have made efforts to address these delinquencies, including a review of the billings that are occurring and resurveying all the subtenant leaseholds to ensure that the billings have been accurate. Staff is committed to identifying a reasonable path forward, which remains in compliance with our master policy resolution, while also providing relief and options to our tenant. It is not equitable to allocate the full burden of non-payment of the subtenants to Raymont, as these subleases were entered into in an act of good faith at the NWSA's request. Thus, the recommendation is a one-time rental credit to Raymont in the amount of $435,681.97. This amount represents the combined total of the terminated leases and the outstanding balance of the subtenants due to Raymont. Then, Raymont will enter into a payment plan in the amount of $554,626 with the NWSA. This idea is put together in the First Amendment to the lease, and the key terms are: Raymont will agree to reduce the subtenant's rental retroactively to January 1st, 2023, which is when the subleases initially commenced. This reduction is in accordance with the remeasure that was performed in May of 2025. With this occurring, the NWSA will then agree to provide a rental credit to Raymont in the amount of $435,681, being the total outstanding subtenant rental balance owed to Raymont. Raymont will then enter into a payment plan with the NWSA for the remaining balance owed, less the rental amount credited. It's important to note two pieces to this. Any failure to perform on the payment plan will be a default under the lease, and should that occur, Raymont will then be required to reimburse the NWSA for the credit provided. Then, in addition, we are also clarifying the subleasing obligations. Raymont will agree to continue with the remaining five subleases through March 31st, 2026. After that point, any additional extension will be at their discretion. Any subleases which are in default may be terminated at Raymont's discretion. The financial implications of this amendment: the NWSA will not recoup the rental credit in the amount of $435,681. This will result in an expense to be recognized in 2025. The remaining outstanding balance that Raymont owes to the NWSA will be paid in 12 monthly installments, which average $48,530, in addition to their base rent that they will pay monthly in the amount of $103,360. There is no significant impact to the original net present value of the lease. The action, in conclusion, being requested is request the managing members of the Northwest Seaport Alliance authorize the CEO or his delegate to execute a First Amendment to the Raymont Logistics Seattle, Inc. lease at Terminal 10 in substantially the same form as attached. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll call for a motion then.
So moved.
Second.
Commissioner, was that you, Mr. Commissioner Feldman or Wilcox? Okay.
All right. Oh, come on. It's the first one, right?
Commissioner Fellman, and the second was?
Marzano.
Pardon me?
Marzano.
All right. Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. Any questions or comments?
I do.
Commissioner Ng.
I will vote yes on this. However, I must say, I understand that the port encouraged Raymont for these subtenants. But it was only supposed to be temporary. Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling that these rents went unpaid for a longer time than they should have. I think that is my one gripe about this. Because we'd had a similar issue in Tacoma, in which a trucking company, which they have had some issues because of the tariffs, and they told us ahead of time when they would have troubles paying rent. and it didn't exceed a certain amount of time. It was just a couple months, and we were made whole. Whereas this went on for a while to the point where it, as well as $500,000. I think that that is one of the things that we need to have some safeguards and guardrails that it never occurs to the point where, I know this is a unique circumstance, so I'm not really saying, oh, real estate, why? I know there's some unique circumstances, but even in these unique circumstances, we're gonna have to have some sort of guardrails and pivot. It's not going to be smooth, but I think we do have to be more firm.
Understood.
Commissioner Wilcox.
Thank you. You mentioned that there were some other factors that resulted in them being behind on something a little over half of the total amount that you mentioned. Is there any indication that those issues have been resolved and that they'll be able to perform on the payment plan?
We ran a number of scenarios, payment plan scenarios, by Raymond with the goal of what can you confidently say you will be able to be successful with, and they felt that the 12-month plan is very doable for them and that they will be able to make those payments. To your question, I don't know that I have a more specific answer than Raymond has been facing market challenges, but they feel like they have enough business to be able to support this payment plan.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Marzano.
Yeah, a couple quick questions.
Yeah.
Two of the subleases went out of business, basically. They quit, right?
Correct.
And that came to the $183,000.
Yes, and that is the total rental owed less the security deposit that was collected.
Okay, but there was also the other five that were being that were subleased to the tune, and they're behind of $250,000. Am I right?
Correct. Yes, two of the remaining five have outstanding balances.
But then you're also asking to keep the remaining five subleases going. And
correct.
Okay, I guess I'm a little bit confused, because why weren't they able to continue to pay if they're still going to want to lease subleases?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Oh. If I may, Jimbo, Senior Director of Real Estate for the Alliance. Yes, the five remaining are continuing, but one of the things we did, other than the soft market putting them behind, was that their dispute that the lease areas were not correctly built. And that's when we had to go back, went out with the surveyor, and got everything re-surveyed and adjusted. And that actually took, that process alone took a few months. And in those months, on top of the fact that they were struggling in the soft market, they also stopped payment because of that claim. And we've got that rectified now. And retroactively, you know, crediting the rents back with the agreement with Raymond. And it also puts us in a place where going forward, we're asking for this waiver because we're trying to start a clean slate. And going forward, we would no longer, we clearly identified to them that we no longer are asking for Raymond to do this as a favor of sorts to the Alliance as far as keeping the subtenants. Going forward, any subtenancy would be strictly Raymond's discretion.
But, and if I could just have a quick follow-up. I don't disagree, and I'm gonna support this. I just question a little bit during the time while you were adjusting or making sure all the properties were aligned and everything else, I'm assuming the trucking company still utilized that property.
They did. And if I could offer some clarification there, the trucking tenants felt that since the billing was not necessarily accurate, which was unrectified during the remeasure, they were holding off payment until that billing was correct. And so a few weeks ago, we had a meeting with the trucking tenants, Raymond, and then NWSA Real Estate. And the trucking tenants acknowledge that the billing is now correct, and they will be working with Raymond to bring their balances to current.
I guess I just would have looked at some kind of reduction instead of just waiving the entire obligation that they had. That's just my view.
Mm-hmm.
Questions or comments? I guess I'll comment a little bit. Generally, a soft market is not a defense to a contractual obligation. Otherwise, we're in a world of hurt. Because in a strong market, other folks aren't paying us more. But I guess I share Commissioner Ng's concern and Commissioner Marzano's. Generally, if you don't feel the billing is correct, you pay what you believe is correct, and then you talk about the difference. You don't withhold the whole payment. I guess I'm just not really satisfied with how this whole thing transpired over the time. Having said that, I will vote for what you've recommended today.
Yes, and it's the difference here is the uniqueness is that the subtenants are there because we asked. Okay. And that's hopefully going forward, that's not something we would do, because we had asked for Raymond to actually keep the tenants that were there when the Raymond came on board with us. And then as far as them going beyond the initial short-term lease, there was an extension, and in that extension, we once again kind of alluded to the fact that we were asking Raymond if it was okay for them to continue with the subtenancy.
Okay. Well, I was not aware of that.
Commissioner Ng, then Commissioner Muhammad.
I was not aware that we were actually asking them for the extension. I knew that we were granting it in terms of a temporary because we wanted to make smooth. We didn't want any disruptions. You know, for everybody to be happy. I think the only thing, like, let's say it does happen again, there's a unique circumstance, there does need to be guardrails that it doesn't turn up to be $500,000.
Definitely.
I think that's where, after 1 month, after 2 months, maybe there's a way that we step in to with Raymond, since they are the ones who hold the lease, like, what's going on? I did want, to help every business, but at the same time, I didn't say $500,000 just, subsidize this.
Agreed.
So just to clear this and moving forward, because Raymond is a good tenant, good business, we want to keep businesses in our terminals active, I will be voting for this, and that they will be held accountable to that 12-month plan.
Yes.
Commissioner Muhammad, I'm told you have your hand up.
I just had a couple of quick questions. One, it was my understanding that the trucking subtenants were initially expected to relocate, which is why my understanding was that, which is why we asked Raymond to include them in the agreement. What changed about that? What has changed since then? Why didn't they relocate?
So our goal was to be able to provide a location for the trucking tenants. And while Terminal 10 is available, we thought that would be a good location because we do not have another comparable available property at this time. However, as sites are becoming available, we are keeping them in mind to see if it's suitable to relocate.
Thank you. Any additional questions or comments? Commissioner Fallman.
I do have an additional question to that.
Go ahead.
You guys are considering, I'm online, so it sounds like you are coming in a little delayed. My follow-up question to that is, so you all are still considering relocation options. Is there a timeline, an estimate? Can you provide more clarity around that?
I believe our best estimate is sometime in 2026. The inability to give an exact estimate is because Raymond will not fully utilize Terminal 10 until they are able to enter into Phase 2, and that is contingent upon receiving approval from the EPA and other agencies to utilize the Terminal 4 transload facility. So there's some uncertainty of when that will occur, but we're hoping that will occur sometime in 2026. So during that time, we're looking for other suitable locations.
Thanks for sharing that timeline. And I hear what Commissioner Ng is saying as well. And I do want to know, typically we're not obviously involved in this type of dispute of this nature. And will you all come back to us at a later time or even now address what you'll be doing differently, what appropriate processes will be put in place to address this, and how will we not... How will we ensure that we're not part of a dispute? Because it sounded like the dispute was between Raymond and the subtenants, but we somehow got involved in it because we encouraged them, although we didn't require them to go into agreement with the subtenants. They did that at their own risk.
Yeah, so that is addressed in the First Amendment on the subtenant language revision. It's just a small change, but it's enough that it makes a difference. We put in there that Raymont has the right to terminate subtenants that are in delinquent status. And that was where Raymont felt they didn't necessarily have the right to do that before. So that draws a line that they are the party managing these subleases, not the Alliance.
Commissioner Fellman.
So could you describe the nature of these trucking companies? Are they large trucking companies?
They are not. They are small, independently owned trucking companies.
And the Raymont was not able to use the full property because of some whatever contamination in the soils or something that they needed. I don't know exactly what the EPA consideration was, but so having this potential revenue was potentially good for Raymont, right?
Yes.
So this was, you know, they can make something on it because they couldn't use it for rail or whatever things that they were hoping to. At the same time, we get to keep the UPS lease that was where we were talking about. So the Port Alliance maintains that instead of moving them over to UPS, right? So it seems like it's a mutual beneficial relationship.
Yes.
But these small trucking companies were not able to weather the downturn in the market.
Yes.
Agreed.
Right? So, but you believe that this repayment schedule, we can be made whole again, and it's sort of interesting, like our last two presentations are like tenants that are having a hard time. It's really good for our new commissioner to see how lucrative this business is. But the opportunity to get back this money pretty much is due to your cleverness here to make us pretty much whole.
Yes, and then the nuance of basically putting in writing that Raymont, if it came down to it, did have to exercise the right to exercise their landlord rights. It's not anything that we ever told Raymont they couldn't do because that's between Raymont and their subtenants, but Raymont has always kind of held back because they kind of did it on behalf of the Alliance. And now in writing, we're saying if it came down to it, they have the right to exercise all of their landlord rights.
It's on you.
That puts that block, should it ever go back down that path.
All right, thank you.
Okay, I've not seen any further hands then, so I'll call for the vote. All those in favor of the First Amendment to the Raymont Logistics Seattle lease at Terminal 10, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Is there any abstention? Commissioner Mohammed, did you vote?
Aye.
Thank you very much. The motion carries unanimously. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is making us some money, I think. Interlocal agreement with the ports of Benton, Pasco, and Walla Walla. Steve Belaski, the Director of Business Development.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. CEO Wolf. It's a pleasure to be here today. I'm going to discuss a proposed interlocal agreement between the ports of Benton, Pasco, and Walla Walla. So specifically, our request today is that the managing members of the Northwest Seaport Alliance authorize the CEO or his delegate to execute an interlocal agreement between the Northwest Seaport Alliance, Port of Benton, Port of Pasco, and Port of Walla Walla to facilitate collaboration between the ports to develop an inland logistics hub in the Tri-Cities region with direct transportation links to the NWSA gateway. The purpose of this basically is that, well, I should start by saying that the ports of Benton and Pasco and Walla Walla all wish to enter into this ILA. The primary purpose being that it would facilitate collaboration between the ports around activities specific to developing inland logistics hub infrastructure and activities in the Tri-Cities region. It would enable the parties to jointly identify, develop, and pursue opportunities which support and grow international trade activity and cargo movement, not only for the four parties of this agreement, but we feel all of Washington State. The key elements of this ILA are as follows. It would basically allow communication and collaboration among the ports related to the development of an inland logistics hub in the Tri-Cities region with service connections to our gateway. The ILA could consider additional members in the future. Another key element would be marketing. We would identify, discuss, and develop joint marketing efforts to promote the Inland Logistics Hub, the Tri-Cities region, and the Northwest Seaport Alliance to potential customers and investors with a focus on companies involved in international trade. We would also use the agreement to seek alignment on land use planning and policies for real estate and transportation infrastructure related to targeted Inland Logistics Hub objectives and activities. We would also discuss and collaborate on potential funding opportunities, including grant applications that would directly support, again, in the logistics hub activities. At this point and at this time, it is not envisioned that the parties to the initial ILA would jointly invest in infrastructure projects. The ILA would be a vehicle to discuss these possible infrastructure investments. And the agreement could be amended in the future to allow for such activity. As such, the parties to this ILA could independently establish their own agreements for infrastructure projects supporting hub activities. But that would be, at this point, separate from this ILA. And for the benefit of the commission and the public, when we talk about an inland logistics hub, what's on the screen now is basically core elements of what we're considering is defined as an inland logistics hub. It's certainly not necessarily comprehensive, but it just gives you a sense of what we're, the type of activities or the type of infrastructure we would want and why the Tri-Cities region fits this criteria. So I won't go through the entire list, but I just want to give you an idea of what we're talking about when we say inland logistics hub. And some background on this overall concept and effort. We feel that establishing an inland logistics hub in the Tri-Cities region aligns with our ongoing strategic initiative to develop inland rail hubs, which expand the service reach of our gateway. As you recall, we have similar, or we have other projects in places like Minot, North Dakota, and Pocatello, Idaho. And specific to the Tri-Cities area, as you are aware, Tri-Cities Intermodal has successfully launched a rail service connecting Walla Walla to our gateway. The ports of Pasco and Benton have similar projects under development, which could be complementary and support the growth of a broader logistics ecosystem in the area and help attract companies involved in international trade. The parties to this agreement view the Inland Logistics Hub concept as an opportunity to drive economic growth and job creation. And all parties are supportive of this collaborative approach envisioned by the ILA, where we can ensure productive alignment of our activities as well as our collective resources while continuing to offer competitive options for the respective port districts. Each port participated in the formation of this agreement, and I will share that in December, Benton, Pasco, and Walla Walla requested and received approval from their respective boards to execute this agreement. So they have all already approved to move forward. In terms of financial implications, the costs associated with this ILA would really be confined to marketing efforts that are described, as I mentioned, the key elements. At this point, it is envisioned that each port and the alliance would be responsible for their own costs related to these activities. So the financial impact of the to the alliance is minimal and would come from normal administrative duties. So with that, I'll again, summarize the action requested. We request the managing members of the Northwest Seaport Alliance authorize the CEO or his delegate to execute an interlocal agreement between the Northwest Seaport Alliance, Port of Benton, Port of Pasco, and Port of Walla Walla to facilitate collaboration between the ports to develop an inland logistics hub in the Tri-Cities region with direct transportation links to the Northwest Seaport Alliance Gateway. And that concludes my presentation, and I welcome any questions.
Thank you. At this point, then, I'll ask if anyone would care to make a motion to enter into this interlocal agreement.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Ng, seconded by Commissioner Keller. Keller slash Cho. questions or comments? Commissioner Ng.
Yes, I have a bunch of comments today. First of all, I'm very happy to see this ILA between our ports and Central Washington ports. Anytime that we can work together for state prosperity and trade, that's great, especially leading to our statewide trade strategy, to attracting the governors as well as large legislative support for all of our ports. The one thing that I do have a taking a look at is the maybe competitiveness between the three ports. I like the fact that you emphasize collaborative, because in a way, I want all of these ports to be successful and get their ROI, return on investments. And if they invest separately with competition, but there's not enough business or it's wrong, I'm just wondering if this ILA or is there meetings or whatnot to, I guess, encourage a more collaborative nature rather than, let's say, between the Port of Tacoma and Seattle, the reason why we formed an alliance so that one wouldn't make a $1 billion investment in this particular terminal and another here, and there's actually not enough business and actually it's a wrong investment. Is there a mechanism or meetings that you would do to have more alignment, as you said?
Well, yeah, no, great point. And yeah, that is, I think, really one of the key purposes of this ILA is to go down that path where we're able to have discussions and collaborate on what makes sense for this overall concept so that the various ports aren't doing what you just described, aren't necessarily moving forward on a project that might be counterproductive to the overall inland logistics hub concept. So I think this agreement could be considered a first step in maybe it expands in terms of what's in the agreement, what's not in the agreement. There have been discussions around, you know, I mentioned that the investments in infrastructure were not included. Maybe that gets considered in the future because we have separate port authorities with their own goals and constituents. So no, but that is, I think, an underlying an underlying thought behind this is how do we be more collaborative than necessarily competitive, and we see this as one way to at least start down that path.
I'm looking forward to you helping.
Commissioner Keller.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Just wanted to mention I'm excited about this. As you know, Steve, Commissioner Fellman and I went out and we took a look at the possibilities. The Port of Benton County took us on a tour. We looked at this immense amount of land and the opportunities that we have. They're excited about it. But again, to point out what Commissioner Ng said, there's make no doubt about it. The person who took us on a tour said, we're excited about doing this, but we don't have a lot of funding. So there's always that when you do collaboration, there's also dollars involved, and we need to go in with our eyes wide open with regard to that as well.
Well, and again, this agreement does not obligate us to any financial investment at this point. And I would also add that, I guess, back to your question, Commissioner Ng, there are a lot of different types of cargo opportunities that can be considered for this hub. It's not limited to one cargo type. There is a lot of investment activity going on in the Tri-Cities right now. Dairy Gold just opened their new production facility and they've already started exporting, but there's other types of companies that could bring in not necessarily containerized cargo, could be project cargo, autos. I mean, there's all kinds of things that, you know, so I think the pie is pretty large, and by us, I think, combining resources in terms of our marketing and our outreach to companies, that's what I think where the power is to attract businesses so that there's enough cargo to go around, if you will.
Commissioner Wilcox.
Thank you. You just partially answered my question, but besides the powder and cheese opportunity that you mentioned, what are the other initially targeted business lines and commodities that you'll focus on? And how does that interface with the Columbia River opportunity that they already have?
Sure, no, great question. I mean, what's moving today, as I mentioned, Tri-Cities Intermodal has a service up and running. They are focused on ag, containerized ag products, so a lot of hay that's moving today on the service. So the starting focus is the fact that there's so much agriculture in Eastern Washington that wants to export. So this is one way to support and allow those companies to expand their export capacity. But we do need a more diversified portfolio in terms of business. So I think what we're envisioning, again, is that by combining our resources and doing market outreach, we do need to attract import activity into the region. I mean, that we need some anchor tenants to really make this a sustainable long-term operation. To your question about the river, I guess in my view is I see that as an opportunity, again, to diversify your cargo mix. I'll cite an example. I believe it's the Port of Everett was just promoting. They offloaded a major out-of-gauge piece of machinery at their harbor, and it was transferred to a barge to move up the Columbia River system. That's what I see where the benefit of the river is that you can move cargo that wouldn't necessarily move in a container or on the rail. It's too big, too heavy, too bulky, whatever, especially if they are attracting companies that want to construct new facilities in the Tri-Cities, you may need that route. I completely understand the concerns about potential competitive factors, like there is a container port on the Columbia River system and they've had barge service before, but in my view, it's the risk there is not as great as the opportunity that presents itself by attracting other types of cargo.
Yeah, and I wasn't seeing it as a risk, except for them.
Yeah.
Okay, any additional?
Quick question.
Mr. Cho.
Yeah, I remember when I visited Benton, there were discussions about installing a loop track and other infrastructure investments. Is that still squarely within the Port of Benton's purview, or is that going to be part of the discussion under this RLA?
It's still under there. I mean, they own the land. It's their project. I think what we can do initially with this ILA is we can look at how do we jointly support if there's a grant opportunity or other third-party funding opportunities that we can pursue. I think we'd bring more to the table if we're coming together as a region to request those monies. Again, the infrastructure investment itself, again, it's initially outside the scope of this. It doesn't preclude the alliance from investing in the region and in partnership with one of these groups. And I think in our discussions, all the port authorities recognize that it remains an option if it makes sense. But I think the other ports are also wanting to maintain some of their independence at this point, their ability to be competitive. So I imagine, given that this is what I consider a first step, some of this will evolve over time as we start the work of doing an inventory of what assets do we have available, how do we best leverage those, what's our competitive position. And I think some of that will probably become clear as we go forward.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Calkins.
As we've been discussing this, and when you first brought this forward, I think last month for a briefing, this strikes me as an area where our hybrid status as an entity is really plays into the decision, which is we're a public agency that's quasi-entrepreneurial. We are trying to figure out how to build business, right? And if this were easy, some deep-pocketed private sector party would have come in and done it, And so there's real risk here. And I think working with another port brings challenges, but also addresses part of that risk factor, which is, you know, we've been tasked with creating economic infrastructure. And so there may be a valley of death here that is hard to overcome for any private sector entity, but collectively as ports, we can create the infrastructure that then does generate significant new economic activity. And so I like how we're starting. This is a relatively low investment initiation, but that's what I'm going to be looking for is, you know, we are going to come to a point in this where, you know, we're going to have to pony up significantly to really generate new opportunities, or we're going to have to cut bait. And so I'm anxious to see how things go, and you've got my support, but I do want to be thinking, you know, from that perspective is how quickly we can get to the point where our initial investment is then followed up by significant private sector commitments to really make this thing work.
Yeah, and I would just say the advantage we have is we have an existing service, you know, so we're already considerably down that path. It's already up and running. How do we take advantage of that and build on it and build on that success to help attract additional businesses and cargo?
Mr. Fellman.
Just real quickly, and somewhat following up on Commissioner Coffin's point, the ability to market the region, I mean, that should float all boats, right? And the fact of the matter is these waterways are public assets. I mean, we are naturally endowed at natural ports and the river being so far inland and all that. So I am comfortable with the fact that this is greater prosperity for the whole state. You know, we are competitive, but we are all, you know, in the state together and all collect tax dollars and stuff like that. So I believe, you know, building on programs we already demonstrated we can do is great. I think we have some public obligations for the general good, and without being a socialist, I still see this as low risk because it's going to be beneficial one way or the other.
Commissioner Hasegawa.
I'm really excited about this. I would like to thank you for the work that you've been doing to bring it before us today. I just want to take a step back and appreciate how significant this is, because just a year ago, we were back on our heels trying to defend the viability of exports through the North Harbor with our own local government. And you look at where we are a year later, and the proof is in the pudding. We have a statewide trade strategy with the governor in development. We have a MOU with two tribes. We are going to be floating an MOU with the city of Seattle to activate our industrial lands. We have an LOI in the works for T-46, and we have this, an ILA for an inland hub. And all of this is to promote trade and commerce in the most trade-dependent state in the nation. So what a turnaround. And it was not easy. There are so many moving parts, so many players. I am so glad that folks understand how it all comes together as a team effort. And I am so grateful to the leadership, particularly at the Port of Benton, who have brought us out there on multiple occasions to give us in-person tours, to demonstrate the budding economies and clean energy and alternative fuels and alternative fertilizers, and how they are doing their part in building the infrastructure to make sure that this cargo can get on to the rest of the country and then through our gateway to the rest of the world. It's a big deal. And what we're doing is for generations a benefit. I am so incredibly proud to cast my vote in support. Thank you.
Thank you. Finally, I just want to echo that. I mean, this is exciting, and all of us have invested a lot of time going over and seeing what they have to offer. And what's unique about the Tri-Cities and what excites me is that there are three different ports, three different governments. They compete with each other. They're active. I just recently was over there at the Port of Walla Walla. I didn't understand what Port of Walla Walla land holdings and what they had going for them until I got over there. So between the three of them, working together, collaborating, they themselves competing, teaming together with us, I think it's a unique opportunity. Good work. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
With that, the motion is to authorize the CEO or his delegate to enter into and execute the interlocal agreement between the Northwest Seaport Alliance, Port of Benton, Port of Pasco, and Port of Walla Walla. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, aye. Thank you. Those opposed, say nay. Any abstentions? The motion passed unanimously. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
So I think we had on our original agenda discussed having a port community system update, but that's been postponed to a future meeting date due to illness of the presenter. So we'll then hear a cargo and operations update under general business.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair McCarthy. So we do have a cargo and operations update, and I'm going to invite Tom Chu and Jeff Bellerud forward to present on what's going on with cargo and our day-to-day operations. Thank you.
Thanks, CEO Wolf. I'm in front of you bringing you all good news, I promise. It's going to top what Steve Blasky just delivered. So really, three good news. I'll start with the container side of business, and I'll move to non-container side. With a great effort from our own team, but also with our customers, that we have a service that used to stop at Vancouver, Canada first, and that has been changed to be calling our port first. So that's a big achievement. We can count on some volume increase as a result of that, and that's FP2 service from Premier Alliance, and this particular service is really from ONE, one of our largest carriers in the gateway. And just to put things in perspective, this particular service was about 240,000 TEUs. So I'm counting on with this new latest change that we can count on some additional volume as a result of that. So good for ONE, our customer, and good for many efforts that from our team. The other great news I want to share has to do with UWL and ESL. It's a niche carrier that exclusively serve between Seattle and Vietnam. They have an express service there. They have just announced they're going to start weekly service this June. That's great news. I checked in with them yesterday, and they said conservatively they're looking at doubling their volume. So this is great news for our gateway. Now, we've been working with them, our team, traveled with them to Vietnam and staged a couple rounds of customer outreach programs, and we've been working with them here, our business development team and ops team, and try to help fill that pipeline so that they can start their weekly service. We've been working on that since 2024, but it's coming together. So great news for our gateway. And congratulations, really, to UWL and ESL. Now, let me move to the non-container side. We have also some very exciting news to share. That is our own Glovis. I think Commissioner Cho can help me, just opened a brand new venture for them, High and Heavy Center in Tacoma. And Tacoma is their choice. They're branching out their business portfolio to add this new segment of business to their already very extensive business portfolio, and they chose Tacoma to be their launching pad. And very pleased to hear they just signed a big contract with a customer. And they will be starting there in the final stage of getting that business launched in Tacoma. And of course, then we have our WWL, and that is equally doing very well. They're looking at consolidating multiple locations into tight flats so that they can streamline their process line so they can grow. So great news to start the new year. I hope we can, I'll come back to you, give you six good news next month. I don't know if I can do that, but I'll stop there and hand it to Jeff.
Excellent. I guess I got to keep the good news rolling as well. We've got some numbers, some operational numbers hot off the presses. So really, Commissioner Wilcox, we've identified three key KPIs saying, what's the health of the gateway? And really, so we can be laser focused, both our marine terminal operators, labor, as well as our staff. We're looking at vessel productivity, so how many containers move on and off a vessel per hour. We look at truck turn time, which is really, for years it's been, when a truck enters a gate, how long did it take the terminal to service that truck? We said we want to really identify the whole trucker experience. So we have RFID readers where we see the queue starting. So we're now measuring that full trucker experience for all terminals throughout the Seattle and Tacoma gateways. And then the last, very important to us, is our rail dwell. So from the time a container discharges off a ship, how long it takes our marine terminals to load that to a rail car. So those are the three KPIs that we've been tracking for a number of years. And I'm happy to say today that we were up year over year in all three of those metrics. Our vessel productivity into 2025 up 5.5% to 27 moves an hour, which is a big deal. 27 moves an hour is a great step forward. We've identified we'd love to be at 30 moves an hour. We see that as industry leading, or West Coast leading, and that's where we want to be. But 27 moves an hour is up from 25.6 in 24, so a nice step forward. That rail dwell, we finished 2024 at 4 days. 2025, we finished at 3.2 days. That was industry leading on the West Coast. That's something that we're working with Tong's group to really tout. We need that information out to the market. What I'm most proud of about that 3.2 days is we didn't have those wild swings. We didn't have the peak season surge where that number balloons up and then reduces down in the slow times. Our standard deviation was very close to one. We were we never exceeded 5 days, and we had many months in that two and a half day range. So great news story there. And then what I think is near and dear to all of us is that trucker experience and how long it takes trucks to get through our gateway. We saw a 16.9% improvement in truck turn time. We finished 2025 at 69 minutes. It's a great number because, again, that includes that queue time from trucks entering the harbor to the time that they exit. In 2024, we finished at 83 minutes, which was an improvement from the prior year, but now we continue to drive that down. We've set a target. We'd love to see that number at 60 minutes for that total turn time. That includes dual transactions, the full cargo mix. So that's where we want to be. We're not sitting back. We want to continue to improve on these numbers week over week and month over month. But I'm very, very happy with the work that our labor partners, our terminal operators, our railroads, and our team have accomplished here in this past year. Any questions?
Questions? Commissioner Marzano.
Yeah, just a comment. First of all, I wrote down, Tong said all good news. So I'm going to remember that, you know, when I hear from you again. One of the things, and I'm glad to hear that, Jeff, what you talked about as far as our metrics and how we've gone forward, we could not do this without our labor partners. So I would encourage having another future meeting. I know you meet with the labor partners, but maybe look at a joint meeting, let them know how much we appreciate what they've done, but we're not done yet. That we got to continue moving down that line because competition's not stopping, and we can't either. So, but just thanks for the good news.
Absolutely.
Mr. Fellman.
Definitely, I think encouragement in attaboy goes a long way. It doesn't cost us anything. I don't know whether your colleagues in Vancouver, Jeff, will appreciate the fact that we got the first call from one, and I think it's a great example of having your expertise over there. I definitely see it as great. But the KPIs you mentioned, isn't this something that the PCS system will help us keep track of? And I was kind of hoping we were going to get that presentation today. But so the more that gets mature, the more these numbers will be available. And I just wanted to know whether, with this new national administration, whether that, I keep on flow, was that the, is there still efforts to have this sort of national chain of command go forward?
Yeah, two things on that. Mark Storsley, our director of operations, was ill today. He was excited to give the presentation on the PCS, so he'll be delivering that next month. These numbers come straight out of our port community system. So what he's going to show you next month is there's actually a mobile app. So you'll be able to pull up your port cell phone and look at these numbers week by week. You can pull terminal by terminal. You can look at any date range you want. So we are very excited to talk through what we've done this past year to advance the port community system and where we see it going. So that's great. In terms of flow is still on track. We are both giving data as well as consuming some data. We're working on consuming some big files from the Flow group. They've actually asked me to be on their executive board this year, so we'll be much closer to it as the year progresses. The opening meeting is next week, I believe. So, yeah, I'm excited to see what and where we can contribute to that, as well as I really want to benefit. I want to take the data that other ports, other BCOs, other industry partners are providing into that and look to see where we can implement it into our port community system.
Excellent. Thank you.
Commissioner Eng.
I guess a couple of things. Thank you for advancing the port community system and giving us these benchmarks every month that we see them. Really appreciate that. One is, do you see our rail productivity or collaboration getting better these past years, and how do you see that better? And then to Tong, where did we end with cargo this year in terms of TEUs and break bulk, and how do you see that changing in 2026 if you do have a crystal ball?
I'll start.
You go first.
Okay. In terms of our rail,
make up a number.
I think we've really evolved the communication. We're now, for so many years, our terminals were really retroactively planning out their weeks, their weekly train plans, destination-wise. We're now in a proactive state. We're working with the railroads. Our marine terminals are working with the railroads on a daily basis. We play a big role in that with our NIM operation, but we're on joint calls with all terminals, both railways, talking about what we see coming off the vessels a week in advance. We're able to plan, the railways are able to plan their car supply to match that demand. Our terminals are able to plan their labor as well as their yard space based on that destination loading. So, for example, the terminals are able to identify how many trains need to go to the Ohio Valley versus Chicago versus other markets in advance, rather than saying, we've got cargo on the dock, how are we going to react to that? They're now planning that a week out. It has improved the communication mainly, but also it gives the railway visibility to what the needs are to be able to relocate cars into the area, and not just rail cars, but locomotives, locomotive power, as well as their crew base. We've seen a great increase in that collaboration and partnership with both BN and the UP.
Okay.
Hang on.
All right. So thank you, Commissioner Ann. You always ask one of the toughest, tough questions here. As I'm thinking of what we what I got in front of you in October, delivered the cargo forecast, what has changed? I think my overall opinion has not changed in terms of the forecast we have done. There are a couple of positive things that, in my opinion, we were just meeting with Globus a few days ago, and we understand in 2026 that I think we will have stronger performance on our automobile imports, railroad cargo coming in. One of reasons is the fact that when we look at the tariff structure today, say between Japan, Korea versus Mexico, which to me is a competitor, that Mexico is charging vehicles coming out of Mexico coming in is at 25% versus 15% from Korea. So I think those forces work in our favor for now until the administration decides to do something different. On the break bulk side, I think we took a downturn in 2025. I do see that where our situation improve as hopefully things continue to stabilize and stay in that way so that companies know they can invest with some certainty. So I see some improvement in 2026. I don't know if that answers your question, but on the container side, you know, same.
Any additional questions or comments? See no hands. Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay. We're moving now to CEO announcements.
I just wanted to echo the sentiments of our team here with the Globus meeting. And I really want to thank Commissioner McCarthy and Cho for making time to meet with Globus again. The leadership team came to town. Their leader from South Korea, from Seoul office, was here with us. And it means a lot to have commissioner interaction. I know all of you have had those opportunities. I look forward to Commissioner Wilcox having those opportunities as well. And what's really exciting about Globus and what their vision is here in our gateway is that they have identified us as a key hub center, as you heard, one of two in all of North America. And so we can expect tremendous growth opportunity with them over the next few years. And some of that may even bring some opportunity to our Seattle Harbor, still exploring that. So we're hopeful that we focus a lot of time and energy on the international container business, and that's certainly important. Yet we are a diversified port gateway, and the conventional cargo, the ro-ro cargo, our domestic container cargo is also a very important part of our business. So thanks again, and with that, I'll turn it back to Chair McCarthy.
All right. We're at commissioner comments. Commissioner Cho.
Yeah, I just want to take an opportunity to build on John's comments. We had a really great meeting with Globus. That was last week, huh? Last week, I think that was on Friday. It was like the day after New Year's.
I lost track.
And it was very encouraging to hear their plans, despite some of the uncertainties around the U.S.-Korea trade relationship. They still remain firmly committed. You know, they imported over 1 million cars last year in the United States from Hyundai alone, and they have plans to continue with long-term expansion. We talk about inland processing. They want to start processing cars in the Midwest, potentially, in order to free up some of the bottlenecks. But I think the real delight of that conversation was that they actually want to start moving containers, too. And not to jump the gun on this, but they evidently move about 500,000 TEUs every year of automobile parts. And they see an opportunity to take over a terminal, and they expressed interest in taking a terminal. All that to say, the K terminal idea is still on the table, and it is still very much alive. And as the staff know, I pitched it once again to Globus when they were here, and I think John, you can attest to this. They were the most positive and receptive to that idea they ever have been in the last 2 years that I've been pitching them. In fact, TK, who is the executive from Korea, asked us to send a proposal in on that very idea. And so I'm really looking forward to us to try and push that idea and get them to make a real investment in our gateway.
Commissioner Marzano.
Yeah, thank you. I just want to wish everybody a Happy New Year. I want to thank the two co-chairs for their past year and devoting of their time and efforts. I know how difficult that can be at times. I want to thank the staff, and last but not least, go Hawks.
Okay.
Go Hawks.
Commissioner Keller.
I want to also wish everyone a happy new year. It's going to be a prosperous, healthy new year, so I'm looking forward to it. 2026 is going to be a good turnaround year. I also want to make sure that I welcome our new commissioner, Port of Tacoma, and Northwest Seaport Alliance managing member, JT Wilcox.
Thank you.
Congratulations. We look forward to everything that you bring to the table.
Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Ng.
Same. Happy new year to all, and I did want to thank our two co-chairs for your leadership this year. Pretty strong. It was a hard year. It's definitely one of the hard years, but I'm glad you two were in leadership to see us through. And I am looking forward to 2026 to build upon that. And I also did want to welcome our new Port of Tacoma Commissioner and Seaport Alliance Managing Member, JT Wilcox. And I'm looking forward to work with you and also work with you at that legislature. We need help.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Fellman.
I'd just like to acknowledge how appropriate Mr. Wilcox's replacement of Don Meyer is. Having an ad guy in the seat is, I think, an important contribution that Don has always made, and having a farm boy is a good thing. But also, I worked with his dad when he was on the Puget Sound Partnership Leadership Council. To have an ag guy that also wants to spend his time not just in the redneck committee, subcommittee, it's with his joke, but it just shows what the family's inclinations are. So thank you very much for being a public servant once again.
Commissioner Cho.
Yeah, I just want to pile on. I want to welcome Commissioner Wilcox to the Poor family. This is a little known fact, and I hope you're okay with me sharing this, but in 2017, when I started my egg export business, the Wilcox family was the first family to pick up my call when I wanted to export to Korea. They're the first people I worked with. I know your cousins, your father, and I went to DC once together. And so we have a long history that goes back 8 years. And I'm so glad that I'll be able to be working with Commissioner Wilcox in this capacity, and so welcome.
Commissioner Hasegawa.
Oh, I just wanted to welcome Commissioner Wilcox as well. And I was going to make a joke, but Commissioner Cho beat me to it, that maybe we should start the egg caucus of the alliance. But no, truly, your unique insights and experiences are going to be a true asset to the mission of this body. So welcome.
Commissioner Wilcox.
Well, thank you. I'm hard to embarrass, but you did. I really appreciate the welcome. I'm looking forward to this. I've said many times that I've spent a long time in a partisan atmosphere, and it feels good to be in a less partisan atmosphere. I know everyone here has their own approach, but it means a lot to see this kind of collaboration. And I also wanted to say, as you know, one of the few rookie commissioners that have come around in a while, that I really appreciate the onboarding process, the orientation process, and it was wonderful to see the high quality of staff that comes to work with all of us. I saw that in Olympia many times too. These are people that are highly motivated, highly, highly skilled, don't need the limelight, and sometimes get thrown into the bus. And in spite of the fact that not everybody appreciates people that work for public organizations, I'm glad that we have that high quality of person. I want to thank them publicly and personally for all of the help that you've given me so far. And I'm sure that I'm going to need an awful lot more and screw things up repeatedly.
And we have people to throw under the bus.
Commissioner Calkin.
I'm going to bring things down a little bit and say I'm pretty concerned about the recent stress on our rules-based international order that's emerging from lots of different corners, in part because if you trace the success of global trade, there were a few step change moments. Containerization was one I think we're all familiar with. Signing of WTO and the expansion of trans-Pacific trade was another one for us in particular. But even before either of those was the establishment of a rules-based order where you couldn't just commandeer ships or establish, you know, a sort of extra-national jurisdiction over the high seas. And as geopolitical tensions increase and actions are calling into question the certainty of that rules-based order, our livelihoods are at risk. I mean, we need to know, if you're a ship owner or a cargo owner, you need to know that if it gets on a boat at point A, it's going to get to point B. And so I think we go into 2026 with a big cloud over international maritime. And it, part of our job is to advocate for a continuation of that rules-based order. And to the extent that we're part of the fraying of that, we, the United States, we need to voice our concern and protest. So I don't know that it goes on our DC Olympia or Olympia policy agendas, but I genuinely think we need to be a part of the chorus of voices saying we believe in a rules-based international order in shipping, and we want to adhere to that, and we should model that as a country.
Thank you. Before I turn this gavel over for the final time, welcome, Commissioner Wilcox. We almost made it through your first meeting without anyone using the word egg, but Commissioner Cho got there, so you'll probably hear that again. But so welcome. I do want to say it's been a pleasure serving as co-chair along with Commissioner Hasegawa. I found early in the go that she and I have a very similar style, and we come from a different location, very similar style in running meetings, and so it seems to suit us pretty well. I hope it worked for all of you. It's certainly a time-consuming position, as we both know. I think I ran out of per diems in July. It's thankless in many respects. It's targeted in some respects, but it's definitely very interesting and complex. Appreciate all the hard work of the staff of the Northwest Seaport Alliance and the staff members behind me here that help us run these meetings and getting these meetings going, as well as our port attorney and others. So it's been a great year. Look forward to turning this gavel over to the next co-chairs and sitting in the corner, growing a beard and just kind of isolating and being involved. So with nothing further to offer, the time is now 1:52, and we shall stand adjourned. Okay.